My name is Larice Diamond, and you all should call me Reese. I'm the granddaughter of Dorothea Alice Martin Farmer Brazel Mays Woods Cody. My grandmother got around, but she made sure she always had her man. I am the daughter of Deborah Page Dean. I'm an eldest sister, a beloved aunt, mother, and grandmother to Asher LaJay Garcia Diamond. I use they, she pronouns and identify as a US-born Black woman of Congolese, Guinean, Scots-Irish, and Susquehannock Tribal American heritage. My invocation honors my diverse ancestors and family, expressing gratitude for their strength and resilience, which contributes to my presence here today. And thank you for here, for being present this afternoon. I welcome you to this space as a member of our vibrant low vision and blind community. I am a Council of Citizens with Low Vision Life member, serving as CCCLV First Director, ACB Students First Director, and CCB Membership Committee member. I belong to CCCLV and the CCB ABIV chapter. I first encountered CCB as a 2016 scholarship winner and later joined CCCLV in 2017. I hold ACB and CCB partially responsible for my successful academic journey, which began anew in 2013. I had a career in nursing for 13 years when I was diagnosed with cortical blindness in 2012. I now have several degrees and encourage anyone who feels drawn toward education to do so, regardless of your age. Now, what I remember most about entering the blind and low vision community is my confusion, especially when it came to language. Trying to understand a new way of speaking, new terms and strange acronyms, and just new ways of being, knowing and doing, it created a lot of newness in my life. And it was kind of, something I had to work through. And I approached the situation as I do when I enter any new culture. And that's by satisfying my curiosity through research, which entails reading, listening, and asking questions. So I calmed myself down and that's what I did. So we're going to spend the next hour or so engaged in reflection, listening, and discussing questions. We should do some reading. And by reading, I mean using the multiple literacies that are required to read the world, to read the social, political, and cultural context that involve low vision terminology. And by reading those contexts, we also read people. And so first I'm going to explain the difference between terminology and term, because I like to establish a firm foundation for what this talk is about. And as being the person I am, I'm always curious to know about linguistic etymology, the origins of words, where they came from, and how they have evolved over time. We're going to explore the spectrum of terms from full sight to complete blindness. And then we'll share the evolution of history of the terms with remarks from an interview I conducted with our own infamous Jean Lozano. And then that will be followed by what I hope to be a thoughtful community conversation about the terms and potential future directions. So, terminology and terms, what's the difference? Well, as a nurse, in medical terminology, the term logy or logy, L-O-G-Y, refers to the study of the root, that is the Latin root for the study of. So whenever we see biology, sociology, endocrinology, we're studying how those systems function. But the term kind of differentiates when we talk about terminology. So rather than the study of terms, terminology refers to the whole set of specialized words that are associated with a particular field. So terminology serves as a system of terms. Terms are the individual components of the system, whether they are used in general language or within specialized context. Terms become part of a terminology system. And so today, we are discussing the terms as part of the larger terminology related to disabilities, health conditions, specifically conditions affecting sight. The broader terminology system would include various terms and concepts related to the field of ophthalmology, optometry, and disability studies, encompassing a range of conditions, treatments, and assistive technologies, and legal definitions associated with vision and visual impairments. So let's move to how we understand the spectrum of terms. And so for today's discussion, I've commandeered six terms. First is visual impairment. Visual impairment is a broad term that encompasses all levels of vision loss, not limited to total blindness. Second is partially sighted. It typically refers to individuals who have some level of visual impairment that significantly affects their ability to perform daily activities. However, they are not legally blind. Third, low vision. Low vision is the clinical term for significant visual impairment that can't be fully corrected with glasses, contact lenses, medication, or surgery. Next, legally blind and partially blind. Legally or partially blind people might still have some usable vision, as opposed to being totally blind, where a person has no vision at all. The legally blind term carries a legal definition and has implications in different countries, like the US threshold of 20 over 200. And last, we have complete or total blindness, which is no vision or light perception. So the historical evolution of terms. So those are six terms. And now I will bring in the interview that I had with Lozano. How have the terms evolved over time? I asked Jean and about those terms in the context of ACB, CCB, and CCLVI. I asked him about the historical attitudes and treatment toward different levels of vision abilities. And so I'm going to read excerpts from our interview. Jean was born with glaucoma without irises in either eye and a visual acuity of 20 over 200. He became totally blind at age 18. However, he still thinks visually. He builds from his memory of colors, shapes, and everything he recalls up until 1968, when he totally lost his vision. Gene, for the record, is 73 years old. His experience with terminology began in the 1950s. He attended public school during the start of the movement toward inclusion. In elementary school, visually impaired students were in a classroom together, and students who were totally blind attended a different school. At that time, visually handicapped was the term used to describe limited eyesight. He then integrated with sighted students throughout the remainder of his education, from middle school to college and then to graduate school. Gene attended City College of San Francisco and then San Francisco State, earning a bachelor's degree in psychology, and San Diego State University, where he earned a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation in 1976. After a rocky start to his career, he landed a job at Sacramento State University and was there for 40 years until he retired 7 years ago. Gene has been involved in the Associated Blind of California, which later merged with the California Council of the Blind, and American Council of the Blind, ACB, since April 1972, when he began his membership advocating for accessible signage. Gene emphasized that he connected with the Associated Blind of California, ABC, state affiliate of ACB, and National Federation of the Blind of California through his rehabilitation counselor's suggestion to join an organization of the blind because sometimes you need to work in a larger group to make change. That's something that stuck with Gene throughout the years. As his advocacy network grew, Gene met people like Bob Acosta, Dr. Samuel Janeski, Joan Black, and Bernice Kandarian as he continued to advocate for low vision issues. Within the organizations, he had to deal with attitudes and biases from people who were totally blind and reinforced the idea that people with low vision should disregard their remaining sight and learn to live as totally blind people. He heard comments within ABC and CCB, attitudes that still exist to some degree, such as, "We know people with low vision can still see and read print, but why can't they just accept they're blind and learn Braille?" Sometimes people who are congenitally blind or born blind fail to understand why people with low vision feel passionately about exercising their remaining vision, however little sight may remain. When I asked Gene about terminology, he said that he prefers the term low vision because it offers a more neutral term than visually impaired. Vision impaired conjures a deficiency and was connected to visually handicapped. People would use those terms as though they were a social strain. Jane perceives the term visually impaired, which includes people with 20 over 70 or worse vision, as more inclusive than legal blindness. However, when it comes to most needs, he finds low vision the best description. The term low vision has been around for at least 30 or more years, going back roughly to the early 80s. people involved in the Department of Rehabilitation, students, and the CCB began using low vision as the preferred term. The term fully blind connotes the absence of light, which, while fully sighted, points to color contrast, image depth, and all aspects of the sense of vision. This term, partially sighted, evolves a glass half empty, half full glass analogy, as though someone is missing something or incomplete. It conjures the feeling that only part of something is present and has more of a negative connotation than low vision. There have been internal conflicts over the terms partially sighted and low vision. The attitude has been, accept that you are blind. Advocacy efforts, such as pedestrian warning signal flashings, are challenging to negotiate between people with low vision and those who are totally blind, who may not understand the importance of visual cues to low vision members. Conflicts involving attitudes and values arise. Jane does not quarrel with the term legal blindness, which is framed as 20/200 or worse. Personally, I take issue with the term worse and those definitions. Nonetheless, Jane believes legally blind defines a category acceptable and necessary for regulatory standards and as an agreed upon framework to implement global change. He understands visual impairment as an umbrella term that encompasses low vision, with legal blindness as a subcategory of low vision. Technically, low vision doesn't reach the legally blind standard. The visual acuity standards vary, whether we're discussing the education perspective, the American Foundation for the Blind, or other areas. The definition is very inconsistent. Try looking for the definition of these terms, and it's muddy. Ultimately, Jane feels that regardless of the terms we use, or the new terms that are destined to come along, we need unity across all segments of vision loss, rather than separation. Working together on our issues and in educating the public, numbers count, and by working together, we're going to be stronger. Also, we are more likely approaching a time when the terms will change, and low vision, or a person with low vision disability, or even vision loss, will be outdated. It seems that about every 30 years or so, we start changing terminology, and we may be at the doorstep. He finds it refreshing that we have an opportunity to talk about these things right now. Jane offers us a comprehensive look over time at the way the terms low vision, visual impairment, visually handicapped, people with low vision have evolved in our own community. I really did appreciate the way he invoked the need for collective action. Now, before we get to the Q&A, I just want to have us be mindful that these terms matter. Shifts in language reflect changing attitudes. And we can see that reflected in the discussion about the importance of person first versus identity first language in different communities. In the deaf community, we see the term deaf has now become capitalized when it refers to the deaf community. In the disability community as a whole, we now see the person first as preferred in some settings, such as people who have visual impairments, people who are deaf versus blind people, deaf people. And it's always contextual. It's always a matter of reading the room, reading the spaces, reading the social, political, and cultural context of the spaces we're in. And there is undoubtedly a culture within the low vision and blind community that honors our personhood as people, but we also have a respect for our varying degrees of visual impairment. And sometimes we prefer to lead with the impairment rather than our person. Terms become important when we are talking with providers or trying to get services. There can be confusion if people are not understanding the same terms. And so when we're requesting services, those services cater to different levels on the spectrum of visual impairment. And it's important to understand where we are on the spectrum because a spectrum is broad, and it's going to be critical that we communicate to our service providers where we are on the spectrum so that we can get the services that we need, which vary from full sight to complete blindness. And then we must also consider technology and where technology is headed. Advances in technology correspond to different points on the spectrum. And predicting where technology is going and our future support needs is going to depend on the way we use the language. How do we use the terms and communicate those and teach those terms to the public so that they can understand better where people are on the spectrum and how broad the spectrum really is, and that there's no one size fits all technology solution. And if there is, they need to be much broader in designing it. We should also continue to make our collective voice heard to drive those technological advances. Lastly, when it comes to inclusive practices and policy implications, inclusive language in policy making helps promote socially equitable solutions that benefit everyone. When we ensure that our language, our terms reflect and respect the diversity of experiences in the visually impaired community, we end up creating sustainable solutions, solutions that can withstand the generations. To conclude, it's important to understand the full spectrum of vision experiences to cultivate community solidarity and meet the needs of a highly diverse visually impaired community. The language we choose to use plays a critical role in empowering people across the different levels of sightedness, advocating for services and technology that can improve the quality of our lives. And so I have a few questions for discussion, right? Part of my research process has always been to listen to community, the people who are living the experience. And I know that we have in the room some people who have been in the community for some time. And so I'm going to ask you to offer your input and reflections on terminology and where do you think it might be headed? And so my first question is, how do you feel about the language defining legally blind as 20 over 200 or worse? So when I was talking to Jean, give you a little context on that, we got into a discussion about how some of the terms really can have an emotional impact. They can make us feel a certain way. And for people who are in the legally blind or low vision categories or have ever been there, the term legally blind and low vision, both of those evoked a certain feeling for me. And I was curious to know, did anyone else experience such a feeling? For example, the term, the part of 20 over 200 or worse, it took me a while to figure out what was meant by worse. If I'm 20 over 200, what is worse? And is there even a different way to phrase that? Why does it have to be worse? Does anyone have any comment on that question? How do you feel about the language defining legally blind as 20 over 200 or worse?
Well, this is Nikki. My dad was legally blind, but he was technically almost blind. He started out with glaucoma and he had a good eye and a bad eye. But the interesting thing was that his good eye went all the way down to being totally blind, and his bad eye, he still had a tiny, tiny little bit of sight, and he lived to be 95. And his ophthalmologist had said, if you live to be 100, you will still have a tiny little bit of sight. And I was doing a group at the Lighthouse for about 7 years. It was on brains and stuff. And when I was a kid, I knew blind and sighted. As I got older, then I learned about legally blind. But I really didn't understand all the differences until I was doing this class. And we spent a couple of hours one day going around the room and finding out what each person had. And there were all these different descriptions, you know, high partial, low partial, this, that, the other thing. And I kept track of them all, but I was totally amazed, even though, you know, I'd been volunteering at the Lighthouse for several years by then. And so I think legally blind is an arbitrary, what do you call it? And I would say 20 over 200 or less, I think, rather than or more or whatever it was you said. But I think that it's set that way so that if a person's vision is worse than 20 over 200, then they are allowed to have the services that would come so that, you know, if they could arbitrarily set it at 20 over 100, and then people with that type of vision would be able to take advantage of the services that are offered maybe more easily. I don't know. But at any rate, so I don't know if that helps or not, but I would say 20 over 200 or less, meaning your vision is less than that. But I think it runs a gamut from that point all the way to, you know, being totally blind. And I don't know if they change that on people as their vision gets worse or not.
Thank you, Nikki. I had that was news to me about the low partial, high partial, and yes, 2200 over to 2200 or less. That makes me feel better. Thank you.
This is Christy. That's what I've always said, 20 over 200 or less, and then about the field of vision less than 10 degrees. I think there's a such a large difference between, for instance, people who have 20 over 200, or they have really good pinpoint vision. That's so much different than someone who has, 5%, or even lower than 5%. I know people who say, I'm not totally blind because I can see a hand at, 1 foot from my eye or something like that, or I can see finger count. And then there's some really weird kind of thing that goes on with those of us who have no sight. For instance, I have prosthetics, yet I can pick up some light in really weird situations, and I can tell the brightness or the glare of the sun. These kinds of things are really strange. I used to sit in my conference room at work, and there'd be this light coming in through this one place on the window, and it would just drive me crazy with prosthetics. So where does that come from? And I have a friend who, several friends who say, I lost my sight, or I have no sight, but I've got plenty of vision.
I've heard that too.
That's
This is
great.
Kathy.
That's great.
This is Kathy, and that actually, Christy saying about I lost my sight, but I have vision. I feel that way too. I think I do have vision, and when using the term low vision, I feel like, but my vision is not low; it's high from a more of a vision, spiritual, just being present and life vision. In terms of the, so I've always wondered why is it they say fully sighted, no sight, but not low sight or limited sight, and I think limited sight even has a negative connotation, such as
Limited.
legal blindness, 2200 or worse. But I agree, worse has a negative connotation to it. It's like, oh. It's automatically saying it's negative or bad, I think, in a societal context. And I think that depending, as you mentioned before, Reese, depending on the situation I'm in and who I'm interacting with, what I'm trying to advocate for, or what context I think that it can, it can be best to use certain terminology even. I may use a very a variety of ways to express that I have low eyesight. So I will use the I think that the worst in that legal definition came out of the fact that the society, in creating regulations, will accept providing some resources, services, assistance to people that are worse off than others.
Yes.
And yet, if we had said, if it said instead of, it's not legally partially sighted or legally visually impaired, it's legally blind. Because it's going to that other extreme or other end. And if I personally believe that the way our society has used language and uses language and determines services, that if it had been more positive or more neutral, that probably there would not have been as much support for services for people that have eyesight that is less than 200, yet still is not totally, totally sightless.
That makes a lot of sense, what you said there. Yes, society is more prone to kind of see charity cases and those who are worse off. And so gaining the buy-in from the public to fund these low vision and partially sighted, the need for services. Yeah, I can see how we needed to align the language to kind of elicit sympathy. To put it bluntly. But hopefully we're at an age where we can move past that. And I do, I would be an advocate for, I am now an advocate for 2200 or less.
This is Phil.
This is Ed.
Oh,
And
Ed.
hi. I'm dating myself because back in the day when we have television, we had the tubes in the back of the television. And those tubes, when the TV went off, you had an after image. And a lot of my folks that I worked with in rehabilitation, not a lot, but quite a bit of people who are progressively losing their vision would tell me they could see things and I could understand what they were talking about because your brain is still working. The cells for your visual impairment is still working. And you have that after image of what you used to see. It's still there. So the after image remains. So that's why some people who are losing their vision feel that they can see things. And I know Christy sometimes is staring at the monitor, and that's because at one time she was able to see and she's training to see what's there, but she's not able to see it. But that's part of the after image. It's also a problem I see with a lot of people when they have a little bit of vision, when they had more vision and started progressively losing vision and have a little bit of vision, it's a struggle emotionally, mentally, and visually to try to utilize what you have, and that's the problem. I really like the idea of using legal blindness because society understands that. When I go places with Christy and we're in strange places, I use my mobility cane because when I tell people that I'm visually impaired, they don't understand that. Or if I let them know I'm low vision, they don't understand that. But when I say legally blind, they catch on quickly. Of course, help, having the cane helps a lot. But legal blindness, I think, with society understands that better than low vision or visually impaired, especially if you are low vision. Because if you have vision of 2200, or then mine's just about on the edge of 2200 plus. But if you have somebody who's 2300, 2400, or somebody who has retinitis pigmentosa who pretty much could see 20/20 out of that little pinhole, but can't see, peripheral vision. But when they say they're legally blind, it really does help society or the person that you're approaching for help understand your vision. That's my take on vision.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Going back to the term of 20 over 200 or worse, I totally understand the negative tone in that word worse. But unfortunately, when you say 20 over 200 or less, I think we need to include or less vision because, quite frankly, 20 over 70 is better than 20 over 200. So I think that by adding that extra word, at least people would have a better picture of what you're really trying to say.
You're right. You're right. Because if we say less, then they think it's less than 200. Oh, okay. Hadn't thought about that.
Well, yes, I thought about that because, like, especially for those of us who are numerically challenged.
We don't get it.
I looked at 2200, at 20 over 200 for a while and thought about, well, what does less mean? And, you know, the inclination is to make less, is to lower the 200, right?
Right.
But it's the opposite. It raises the 200 or less.
So I'm guessing that's why somebody used the word worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yes, that's what I imagined. But
yeah, because you would say greater, 20 over 200 or greater, but
that would work. Yeah.
But that's,
well, not really. I mean, technically it would work.
But in reality, that's
I
not.
I think in general, the society doesn't understand the numbers.
Well, we don't understand the numbers.
Right. And using definitions is much better. I mean, I had at least a half a dozen people on my caseload in 32 years that I was rehab counselor. But currently I have somebody who's 20/70. She's not legally blind. She doesn't qualify for Social Security, yet she can't drive. The issue is that any kind of glare or any kind of sunlight or bright light hitting her face, she said it's like, I'm sure you guys are familiar with fluorescent tubes. She said that light is like that. She's seen fluorescent tube lighting in images between it. And therefore, she can't really work at a lot of jobs like Starbucks or, you know, find any kind of work. Yet she's falling between the cracks. And she's not legally blind, according to the ophthalmologist, but she really has a visual impairment that's really severe.
Can I ask a question about that, Ed?
Sure.
She was with is that how her vision has progressed, or did she have laser surgery?
No, that's how her vision progressed. She had it since elementary school, and people didn't understand why she couldn't see well, and yet she could see. It's like somebody with retinitis pigmentosa who has that 20/20 pinhole and can read fine print, but couldn't see anybody from the right or the left because of the peripheral vision is shot.
And her vision was 20/70.
20/70, roughly, yeah.
You know, that's really interesting because my eyes went bad when I was a kid, and then I got contact lenses when I was 16, and then that arrested it. But when I was in my 50s, I had laser surgery, and I got what they called monovision, and they purposely put it at 20/70 so that I could read really small print. But a lot of people didn't like it. They would reverse it, but it didn't bother me. It does bother me when I'm in a darker area. My depth perception gets messed up a lot, and I think that's one of the reasons why I have problems with my equilibrium. But I can see perfectly clearly during the day. There goes my cat. She has to join in. Anyway, I can see perfectly clearly during the day, and I can drive. But at night, I have to wear special glasses to bring that left eye up to 20/20. But the problem is that eye fluctuates all the time. Sometimes it goes up to 20/25 and 20/30. And so I have a whole bunch of different pairs of glasses that I can choose from when I'm driving at night. But I also avoid very dark areas, like between here and Sacramento. There's certain areas there I won't drive at night because I don't feel that any of them bring me up enough. But during the daytime, I don't have any problems. So I'm wondering why she would have had that many problems, because what happens is the brain has to adjust to it. And then if you look out of one eye, you know, it's much worse than the other eye. But I think that's fascinating that happened. But another thing with my dad, he was in a nursing home the last few years of his life in San Francisco. And I didn't even realize this, but out of the back window of the dining area, you could see the tops of the Golden Gate Bridge. And that was, 2 miles away. So we were having dinner with some friends one time, and he was saying, oh, I can see the top of the Golden Gate Bridge. And I didn't want to contradict him, you know. And I thought, oh, yeah, right, Dad. And so the next time I went over there, because I was over there all the time and taking in places, but I looked out the window, sure enough, there was the top of the Golden Gate Bridge. And then we were in the lighthouse one day, and we were sitting on one end of the Bolton Room, the old lighthouse, and he was looking across, and there are these big posters up there. And he starts reading it, and it says, the blind We are the blind leading the blind. And I said, how can you read that? And he said, well, don't you forget, you know, don't you remember, I have glaucoma. It's pinpoint. But he couldn't see his hand in his face. He couldn't read. He couldn't do, really, he couldn't do anything. But he could read that 40 feet away. And it was, I mean, vision is the most amazing thing. The way it works and the things that happen, it's just unbelievable. Just, it really, really is. It's amazing. But I will tell you one other thing. When I was 6 years old in elementary school, because my dad, I was in first grade, my dad had read to me all the time when I was a kid. And he didn't read me fairy tales. He read me about, well, I lived in a black, we lived in a black neighborhood. So I got all the history about all the black heroes in the whole world. And I didn't know what a fairy tale was until I was a teenager. But at any rate, so I learned how to read very quickly because I'd been listening for years and years and years. And so when I decided that when I retired, there were two things I wanted to do. I wanted to make sure that I lived in a place or I made enough money so that I could take care of my parents and make sure they could be in a place where they wouldn't be evicted, because in my neighborhood people were being evicted all the time, and even, and as a very young child I was very affected by that. The other thing was I wanted to read to old people, so I went to a senior citizen's home when I retired, and they could have cared less. But in the meantime, before that, when my dad started losing his sight, I tried to get him to go to the lighthouse. He wouldn't go to the lighthouse. My mom was still alive, but as soon as she passed away, I got him to go to the lighthouse. But in the meantime, but before that, we got him the talking book machines, and that was when the library for the blind in San Francisco was on Sacramento Street. This was like, what, 40 years ago. Anyway, but I used to read to him two nights a week, and my mother would disappear. She'd go to her orchestra practice. She played a violin in the doctor's orchestra because she'd been a medical secretary. And so we'd read for a couple of hours. I'd take her over there, and then I'd go get her, and then we'd have a cup of tea because they lived downstairs. Oh, yeah, they ended up living downstairs in a house that I owned and had remodeled. So they didn't have to pay any rent for the last 20 years of their life. So I was able to do both of those things. But my dad was the first elderly patient person, rather, I shouldn't call him a patient, that I read to. And we had the most wonderful time. And the talking books didn't have a lot of political stuff. He was extremely political. But he fell in love with Louis L'Amour. So he had his talking book machine. And then he had... He was going to buy, he was going to go, I forget what he was going to do, but the Reading Edge on, I was going to say Clorox, Xerox came out. And for some reason, he didn't want, he was supposed to, there was a trip to go to China. And then he said, but you know, I don't want to use up all my money because I want to leave money for you if something happens to me. And I said, Dad, forget it. You go to China and you buy your Reading Edge. And so finally he did. And I said, you're living in my house rent free. I said, you don't need to worry about it. You know, eventually I'll rent this unit out when you're gone, but that's not going to be for a long time because he wanted to live to be 100. Okay. So anyway, he got this Reading Edge and it read in, you could listen in one of eight voices and it would read, it would record up to 50 pages at a time. But the problem was if you had a magazine, like he used to read the Beijing Review, if there was a break in the middle, it would continue on down the column. So I ended up reading that to him. But just regular books, he could record up to 50 pages at a time. Yeah. And then right around that time or before then, I can't remember, but he'd already had the talking book machine. But they were wonderful. So he had a lot of ways of having things read to him as he got older. And one of those was my dream of reading to elderly people. And I'm still doing it because I'm well connected. I run a couple of groups called Storytime and Inspiring Stories where we're reading together. I read a lot of stuff. People read a lot of stuff and they tell stories. So I'm really enjoying my retirement and volunteering and doing all kinds of stuff and being way too busy, but it keeps me out of trouble. So there you have it. And I think I forgot to greet Kathy when I came in. So hi, Kathy, too. I did greet Reese but and Phil. Okay. Thank you very much. Now I'm going to shut up.
Thank you, Nikki. That was great.
So I wanted to bring our discussion back to the terminology. And it's difficult. I want to say living with blindness, and people get frustrated when I say that.
living with blindness.
Yeah, because I say I live with blindness. I live with diabetes. You know, I am not, we say diabetics in action because that's, you know, the term that was, basically what the national calls itself. But, I live with blindness. I live with diabetes. I am not my blindness. I am not my diabetes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I could say, I could say I am blind. I am diabetic. I am a woman. But the other thing that I wanted to say was that people don't like to say the word blind. They describe us as sightless. Mm. And to me, I'm not sure why they choose sightless over the word blind. I don't know if I like the term sightless. It kind of, it's, I don't know.
It's who are like, these people, they, who say?
Oh, almost everybody I meet. Oh, I didn't realize you were sightless.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Ooh, I haven't, okay.
But I don't like that term because, again, it's less.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And not the less that you meant.
The problem when you say sightless and blind, this is my twist, as a rehabilitation counselor, listening to my folks, it seems like they feel that they are incapable of doing. And that's the problem we
From
have.
Sightless or blind?
Blind and sightless.
Yeah.
And I encourage them that if they have the ability to learn the tool, learn and use the tools that are available, they're not incapable. They can do many things. That's what I really encourage my clients that, regardless of their level of vision, of course, unless they're really, because I'm glad Blindfield Services got away from just saying you have to be legally blind, because like I said, 20/70 could be a severe visual impairment. But I encourage people to learn the techniques and learn the equipment and go to the centers for training. They might not need it, but in the future they might, or they never will. It's really helpful. But again, using the term legal blindness tells society where you are. I don't think they understand low vision. I don't think they understand partially sighted. But when you say the word legally blind, they get it. That's how I feel.
I know that
Chrissy
gets some.
I'm sorry.
When you say legally blind. And it might not be, you know, what people understand legally blind to be is debatable, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
They do mm-hmm. understand that it involves blindness and mm-hmm. a level of visual impairment is all I can say. But it does elicit a different response when I say I'm legally blind than when I say I have low vision. You know, people don't.
What happens, Reese, with that?
Don't know what low vision is.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the most foreign term, you know, in my experience, you know, from my diagnosis in 2012. Mm-hmm. I didn't learn about low vision until I went to the ACB conference and learned about the council of people with low vision. And then I realized, oh, I seem to fall into that category. So, you know, even if I didn't know, you know, I was just a regular society person. I didn't know what low vision is. So I know other people don't know. And unless I feel like taking time to explain it, I just I'm legally blind.
Well, I like the definition of low vision when it comes to identifying a support group. Because low vision will catch everybody. Whether you have 20/800 vision or 20/70 vision, you're low vision. So that is good. It's just when you're trying to get help from society, the definition of legal blindness, they understand that.
A comment that I've made is about affecting people with low vision to no vision. And again, my friend would say no, low sight to no sight.
Mm.
So Christy, how do you respond to people when they say, when they tell that you, that you're unsighted? What do you say to them?
Unsighted or sightless? I say, oh, I'm totally blind.
I see. Okay.
I just put it out there. I'm not sightless. I'm blind.
Okay.
You know, I was just thinking, I have to wear these glasses now because of the laser surgery and stuff, and just normal for fluorescent lights and for computers and stuff. They're called blue glasses or whatever. Blue. Maybe yeah. Your friend could try that, because it's like night and day. My eyes would be so tired and so worn out at the end of the day, and now they never are. And I can feel it when I go somewhere and there are fluorescent lights on. Within about 5 minutes, I can feel it. I put my glasses mm-hmm. on, and that feeling is gone. So mm-hmm. even people who are not totally blind, if you could wear those things, if it would help you. Because I know with my dad, we got these daylight, they're sort of fluorescent bulbs, but they're daylight bulbs because the fluorescent lights bothered him so much. So these are things that can, you know, can be helpful, maybe. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, people do get visually exhausted. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, after a while, your eyes can't take any more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's for everyone. Kathy and Christy were kind of circling this next question I have for you that arose from their discussion. And that is, what does the term vision mean to you? Kathy pointed to kind of the identity, spiritual manifestations that are conjured when we hear the word vision. And then Christy also pointed to kind of the broader implications of vision, of like no vision, sightlessness, and then we have low vision. And it seems to kind of take away some of our personal agency and power if we
yeah.
something that we have no vision or low vision. What does the term
insight?
Insight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have vision, we have insight. When we have a vision, we have something that we see in society. I have a vision of my future. Well, I have insight. I have the whatever you want to call it, the spiritual insight or the intellectual insight.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an acuity.
Yeah.
Perspective.
It also goes back to what Christy said, and I'm going to use a different phrasing. She was saying that blindness is not her. It's like blindness is not me, but mine. So it's
yeah.
You know, vision is not me, it's mine. It's the opportunity to be able to have the personal agency, you were saying, Reese, of who I am. And one aspect of me is that I am not fully sighted, but I have sight, eyesight, whereas somebody who's blind does not have eyesight, but we may see in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that relates to the vision aspect of it also in my mind, to me, because the vision is inside, it's seeing things that may not be seen by the visual eye.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Eyesight, I think, is the key word there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about vision loss or visual impairment. A lot of times we neglect to add the I to the sight.
Right.
Okay. That's important to know. So that kind of leads to the other question. Where do you think the future might lead the system of disability terminology? When we think about these terms and the way that society is evolving, trying to be more inclusive, trying to be more linguistically specific, even the idea of adding the I to the sight is something that can move us forward into more being more specific with our language instead of the vagaries that can cause confusion. Does anyone have any thoughts about the future implications of disability terminology?
Well, first of all, we need to think about disability. Nobody has all ability. And so my lack of ability to see, that we term disability, doesn't mean that I lack in all abilities. And unfortunately, we're coming at it from two angles. So I have a disability, and yeah, you bet I have a disability. And I'm going to fight for, you know, what I get, for what I can get, financially, legally, socially, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, wait a minute, I'm me. And while my lack of eyesight is a part of who I am, it's not the whole total me. Same with, I have a disability, I'm disabled in one area of my life. And unfortunately, I don't know where, when society, I'm going to bring up something that you made the comment that you're she, they. And so my watch is talking. So you made the comment that you're she, they. And I have a problem with they because I always think of they as more than one person. So as a person who can't see, when somebody said, oh, they just came into the room, well, how many people is that? And, you know, we make up words for all kinds of things. And I think it would be wonderful if we could make up some different words to describe the differences in our lives. And I know people I've said differently abled and stuff like that, but it just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be wonderful to have some kind of a contest or some kind of a symposium on, let's recreate the words that we would like to describe. For instance, my brother was at one point considering becoming transgendered. So I called him my brister, and I called him, what else? What was the other one that came into my head? I called him Shem.
Mm.
You know, trying to respect where he was wanting to go in life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Christy, you called him what?
Shim.
Will you spell that?
S-H-I-M.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you. Well, my son-in-law did transgender from female to male, and he just goes by he, him, unless he has to fill out something as to what gender he was born. Other than that, he's living his life as a man. Although everybody knows that he's transgender.
But I know that a lot of people don't identify, and they are more like androgynous.
Uh-huh.
And so So they don't identify either as a woman or a man. And I get that. I know a lot of people who have vision loss that don't identify as, they'll do anything not to admit to having a eyesight problem.
Right.
Or yeah. They're almost totally blind, but they won't identify as a total. They'll identify as partially sighted, even though you know, man, for all intents and purposes, you're totally blind.
Well, the other thing, too, is it's culture, because in some cultures, you're either totally blind, meaning you can't see anything, or if you see a little bit, you're not blind.
Yeah.
And that really causes a lot of problems providing services to those who are 2800 vision and they don't accept themselves as being legally blind. So it's going to be very difficult to come up with another definition. I think those who are providing services need to take away all definitions and just say, hey, you are a person. What is your limitations in vision, or what can you see? And that's what I used to do. I would take the report and see the report, but then I would ask the person, what can you see? What can you do? What can you visually do? Why are you applying for services? If you are visually capable of doing, why are you applying for services? What do you need? And that's what we need to do, is identify what the person's needs are and what they see, not what we see on the report. Because a lot of ophthalmologists, when you can see a little bit, they don't even consider you being legally blind. Yeah. Oh, you could function quite well visually.
And I know someone with the same kind of eyesight that Ed has. Mm-hmm. This person has ocular albinism. And this person is way less capable of seeing than Ed is. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
And this person, I mean, I was shocked because this person uses way more of the jaws and different things than Ed does, because the person really seriously sees differently, even though it's the same diagnosis, same visual acuity.
Well, could it be the same as the woman that you were talking about with 20/70 vision and me with 20/70 vision, that we're seeing totally differently with the
Correct.
Same?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you have to ask the person.
What can you see?
What can you see?
Right. Yeah.
What are you missing? What are you told that you're missing?
What are your limitations? I mean, you tell us your limitations of driving at night. That's important to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even with glasses, right, Nikki?
Well, if I had it at the right prescription, then it would not be a problem. But I did have to get the glasses to bring it up to 20/20. But also, having had laser surgery, there's a really bad glare driving at night. So I would have had to wear some kind of anti-glare glass, even if I had done it at 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and also, I always have to wear sunglasses when I'm driving, because the sun is just way too bright. Mm-hmm. The laser surgery just lets
light
in
sensitive.
Too much light. And that might be another problem that I have because of the fluorescent lights, even more so than a normal person might. Yeah. Interesting. But my daughter was dyslexic, and I belong to the dyslexic, what was it called? They call it a disability.
Ordin Society.
I'm sorry, what?
The Ordin Society.
No, I didn't know. It wasn't that. It was a local group, and they had us doing different things. But I said to them, why don't you call it a difference instead of a disability? Because, as I said, like Christy, nobody is disability free. Everybody has some kind of problem. But why do we have to call it a disability? Because we're not necessarily disabled. We can still do things, all kinds of things that we can do. So why not just call them differences? But in terms of blindness, I don't know how that would work. But a learning difference, dyslexia, and they found out that a lot of the young kids who were dropping out of school were dyslexic, and they didn't even diagnose them, and they had no way of helping them. So, yeah, but I think education is really important and early on. But you know what? Maybe we should do a little booklet and change the terminology and say, well, how about using these things and send them out to people and see what they think? I think it'd be fascinating.
It would be
in one of our lifetimes.
Right, when we have more time. Or not even that, but send out a questionnaire, like send out an email and say, what do you think about these terms and how would you like to see them different and get a conversation going or something? I don't know.
We could call it visual abilities / limitations.
Oh, so you're using visual and
limitations to get together.
Yeah, and the thing is that in the textbooks, ophthalmology, what are they using? What terms are they using?
Well,
they're using disabling language
right
in their own textbooks. So they've already considered that if you have a patient who's blind or has sight problems, you're already facing failure.
Gosh, I used to get a lot of ophthalmologists who said, well, there's nothing I could do with your blindness or your loss of vision. Contact rehab and see what they can do.
Yeah. See you later. I don't want you on my caseload.
It's like, folks, transfer them over to a low vision specialist and see what they can do. Don't send them to rehab. You know?
Wow. Fascinating.
All right. So what I'm hearing is that it really, you know, the conversation shows that how diverse we are as a community and how the categories that we have really do little to convey our actual needs.
Mm-hmm.
And for the future, what we want or should have is terms and language that is more humanizing.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And more empowering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Bottom line.
We have about 12 minutes left. And so I'd like to end with a little discussion about how do you think our blind and low vision community can become more united about the terms. And so if we wanted to move toward more humanizing and empowering language, like what might a strategy be to get us moving in that direction? Anyone
How about a resolution?
A resolution. A resolution. It's always the
answer.
All right, Nikki.
Articles in the Blind Californian in the Braille Forum. More kinds of discussions like this. Don't give up on this small crowd.
Right.
You know, really looking in and doing some soul searching and, like I said, maybe creating a word.
Creating a what?
Creating a word. Creating our own terminology.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Anybody? Absolutely.
I never give up on small groups. Small groups, focus groups, that is how things get done.
Yeah. Kathy, Phil, what do you guys think?
In regard to more humanizing and empowering terminology,
yeah.
And I would also add more understanding that we all have different strengths. And that we all have, that we all have different areas that are not as strong. And that if we can, to be more inclusive, to be more empowering of ourselves and of others will enable us then to be able to appreciate assets, and that could help in terms of the shift, making a paradigm shift in terms of the terminology that's used. It was I think of the disability movement, and I'm going to say that very generally, and the idea of inclusivity, of intersectionality, because we all come from various backgrounds as well that impact our experiences with whatever level range of eyesight that we have, and being able to share and communicate and understand, hear and perceive and relate and be able to understand each other's stories and experiences can help in terms of making that paradigm shift in terminology and movement. And it's, I think that having equity in there. So equity is different than equal. Equity means that I receive the services I need, given my eyesight levels and experiences and needs. And it means that that someone else who may have the same exact eyesight condition and acuity level may receive different services and have different needs than I do, because we do see differently, as was
right.
shared, the example. So there's so much variation and so much uniqueness for each individual that I feel humanizing, empowering uniqueness and equity are important for moving forward with future terminology, whatever that may be.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for that, Kathy.
This is Phil.
Yes, Phil.
Okay. I was kind of dismayed when I saw the low number of people here, but after this discussion, I'm kind of glad it was. And I do think it needs to start small, and perhaps if we were to do, I think Christy mentioned maybe some articles in the BC, or maybe at future conventions, continue the discussion. And what comes to mind is the only other comment I made in this discussion was adding the word vision to less vision instead of the word worse. And then I find out that, wait a minute, people's connotations of the word vision are so worse. We got into that discussion of what does that word vision even mean? So, I'm thinking if we had a bigger crowd here today, we would not have gotten as far as we have, because there would have been so many other points, but this could certainly be a starting point to continue this discussion, telling people about what we've discussed and seeing if we can get more insight, build on this, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you, Phil.
And I was just thinking visual sight might be how I might describe it rather than vision.
Good one. Yes.
Low visual sight, low eyesight. Rather than saying low vision or impaired vision. My vision of life isn't impaired. Just my eyesight vision is impaired. is nil.
The other thing that I think we also need to keep in mind from an intersectionality standpoint and inclusion standpoint is that there are individuals that have a full sight. However, cognitively, their brain sees visually not at full capacity.
I had a client like that in rehab when I was a rehab counselor from a stroke.
Wow.
And, and as some adults are aging, their eyesight might be, they might have full eyesight. However, cognitively, they may not be able to read as effectively as they had previously been able to. So it gets back to what Ed was saying about understanding what the functionality is versus, as well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Brain not making sense of what it sees.
All right, folks. Well, I'm going to wrap it up now. I want to thank you so much for coming today and participating in this significant discussion.
Thank you. And maybe when you get ready to write that article, maybe some of us could work on it together.
Yes, that sounds great. Yes.
Yep. All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, Phil, Kathy.
Thank you so much, everybody.